to become more free, to take my coins into self-custody, to buy Bitcoin on a recurring basis, to get my money out of, you know, this tyrannical system. We are in the middle of the transaction, the conversion between dollars and Bitcoin, and people have to trust us.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Bitcoin Way podcast. I'm your host, Michael Jordan. It was such a pleasure to interview Adam O'Brien of Bitcoin Well today. We talked about a lot of things. We talked about our mutual experience in Nashville at the Bitcoin Conference 2024. We talked about Bitcoin Well, their business, ATM, Bitcoin ATMs, some of the trends that he's seen in the space, their exchange business, what makes it unique from other exchanges. And we talked about his the content creation he does. He's an amazing content producer and spends a lot of time really just for the mission of Bitcoin. So I really enjoyed chatting with Adam. He's an awesome guy. I think you'll enjoy this conversation as well. Alrighty, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Adam here with me. Adam, welcome to the show.
My man, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. We spent, I don't know how much time messaging each other, trying to connect in Nashville and couldn't make it happen. Just too much going on. But let's start there. Tell me a bit about your Nashville experience. What'd you think?
Yeah, man, I thought Nashville was great. Nashville is like, I've never been there before, and I had a really, it was great to see the city. I also was attending, the Thank God for Bitcoin satellite event or whatever they would call it. I attended the Bitcoin Park event. So it was great to see multiple different pockets of the industry kind of surrounding the Bitcoin event. I love that because, you know, the Bitcoin event was massive and it was like pretty corporate and even pretty political, which I think has its place. And you know, that was a piece of it. But I really enjoyed kind of getting to know some people, you know, the more intimate gatherings, like Bitcoin Park, there might have been 100 people there. Thank God for Bitcoin, maybe there was 200 people there. Like it was really awesome to be able to, just see the community. And it's so awesome. Like Bitcoin conferences, I'm lucky that I've been doing this for 10 years. I've been in the space for a long time. And so it's fun to go to these events and see people that you kind of only see at these events, and it's great to catch up. It's great to see all your Bitcoin Twitter friends IRL in the meet space and kind of get to, like, you know, shake hands and have a hug and just like feel the person that you regularly converse with, but it's always different doing it in the same oxygen bubble.
Yeah, no, I think of it as putting a personality with the face, and I got right to do a lot of that in Nashville. It was a lot of fun. I'll see if I can get a quick hot take out of you. A lot of politicians there, obviously. Just generally, what's your thought on that? Good, bad, you know, pandering, promising? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think pandering is like pandering is the word that I use most often. Like I've talked about this lots on the base channel and on my show Future Proof. I've talked about it, how it's just politicians pandering to Bitcoiners. I will say that Trump was a huge letdown and RFK blew the roof off that place. I think Trump's speech would have been amazing had RFK not been there.
Yeah.
So it was good to see a politician kind of understand it and not just be like a number go up addict. And then like Trump taking claim for the Bitcoin price, like, was so dumb. But RFK seemed to really get it, yeah, and that was cool. I think at the end of the day, you know, Bitcoin doesn't need politicians. Politicians need Bitcoin. And this is the year that I think the politicians are going to figure that out in a big way. So I think that, all in all, conference was very good. I think what politicians do for the space more broadly, more on a macro, is probably leaning towards a net positive. And the more politicians that we have that truly understand the benefit of Bitcoin, will continue to be a positive. But certainly if there was no politicians there, Bitcoin would have done exactly the same thing, and Bitcoin will have been the exact same long into the future, whether or not we get, Trump on stage or not.
Yeah. It's interesting. So my take was the same. A lot of pandering. It was RFK's speech was amazing. I think Trump's speech, not to absolve him of responsibility for just a lot of rambling, but it was sort of what I expected. Like I've seen Trump speak before, and it's kind of just the way he talks. And I didn't anticipate that he fully understood Bitcoin or anything
Actually,
that.
I mean, Max DeMarco had an awesome take on this shortly after on Noster. He said that Trump treated that like a Trump like campaign speech or like one of his normal rally speeches, not like a Bitcoin event. And I thought that was such a good distinction. I was kind of listening there. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, how is this anything, especially coming out of the RFK speech the day before? It was kind of like, this is not the same. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Going through your election stats and stuff. And me as a Canadian, like I obviously don't really care too much about the election. Like, you know, if the US doesn't adopt Bitcoin, like we just expanded into the States. So obviously that would hurt us a little bit. But at the end of the day, like, you know, if the US fails, that means nothing to me. So it's kind of whatever. But Trump treating that like a campaign speech went to show how little, to your point, he understands Bitcoiners and also just Bitcoin as a whole. I think that his team could have gone a little bit better. And they didn't.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was a Bitcoin mechanic who I like a lot. He was talking about the irony of people, though, cheering on RFK. Because one of the things I think RFK maybe talked about was like a constitutional right to run a node or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, that Bitcoiners are cheering that on. And he's like, that's horrible. Like, imagine the government now defining what a node is. And saying, oh, you can run this node. Oh, that's not a node, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And I think it's a fair point. It's not one that particularly concerns me. I think Bitcoin Mechanic's general posture is always very defensive. And it's part of the reason I like him. But I think it's not helpful in all circumstances and all times and places. But
He's talking about a system of rulers without kind of like hardly defined rules. I think like on a general sense, that is exactly the problem with our democracy right now is like, we all agree, you know, that this concept is bad. Like let's be extreme. We all agree rape is bad, right? No one should rape anyone. But how do we now define rape? And now that's kind of, you know, like now we're into the, when you give one person or one group the power to define the thing that's bad, now we're in this mess that we're in. You know, racism is bad, obviously. Well, what is racism, right? Terrorist financing is bad. Well, what is terrorist financing? Here in Canada, we had this exact instance with the trucker protest. People are donating to the truckers, and our prime minister deemed that a terrorist event. They deemed it an act of terrorism, that trucker protest. And so if you donated to the trucker protest, which by the way, was truck drivers and semi-trucks driving across the coast in Canada, protesting the fact that they couldn't work because they didn't have a vaccine. So that was the protest, you know, compared to like the George Floyd protests, feels pretty calm, but that was deemed a terrorist organization and a terrorist event. And so when the hundreds of people, thousands of people that donated to that event were financing terrorism and had their bank accounts frozen. So when you give the power to define these events, I think mechanics bang on. At the end of the day, though, like, what's the alternative? You either have a right to or a right not to. Like, they're going to define it either way.
No, I think that, that's where I agree with you. I think it's always interesting to hear different takes. It's very easy to just write off politicians, but the reality is we live in the environment in which we live. And, you know, I'd rather have politicians, you know, promoting things like right to self-custody or running a node and that than not. And we can take up arms and fight the fight if and when it becomes, if the nuance becomes messy. So that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, man. Looking at what's happening in Europe, like they're talking about hosted wallets being custodial wallets, obviously. And how self-hosted wallets are the evil ones. Like, yeah, man, we want people that understand the nuance, and we want people that appreciate and I think support the nuance of self-custody. At the end of the day, you know, anything less than that is worse, and we as humans need to probably look at an evacuation plan.
Yeah, definitely. Well, hey man, this isn't why I had you on the podcast, but this stuff is so interesting. I mean, it's so timely, and you know, there are a lot of opinions, and I think most people's opinions are probably too strong, and there's a lot to wait and see what really plays out. Let's skip right ahead to I think you're probably best known as founder and CEO of Bitcoin Well. But you're also a very prolific content creator. You showed me offline your setup. You've got it nailed. I need to get some like rigs to hang lights from and click a button and have everything perfect. But you also, as I understand it, do or have run an organization called Ghost Lab. Yeah. Is that something you could talk a bit about? What is it, and what was the inspiration behind it?
Yeah, Ghost Lab was designed and meant to be the technology arm of Bitcoin Well. Bitcoin Well, when it started, was Bitcoin Solutions, and it was just strictly operating Bitcoin ATMs. And we had kind of two different softwares. Neither of them did what we needed them to do. And so Dave Bradley and I founded Ghost Lab, which was meant to be kind of separate to Bitcoin Well. It was meant to be kind of outside funded. Basically making Bitcoin ATM and eventually Bitcoin adjacent software to be able to install on Bitcoin ATMs. But really the vision was make it easy for anyone to be able to sell, buy and sell Bitcoin. Part of the going public process with Bitcoin Well, we had to really, like, the exchange and our board wasn't super stoked on me, you know, owning and running Bitcoin Well and then owning and running this separate kind of like Bitcoin adjacent company. They deemed that to be a conflict of interest. So we had to kind of fold it all in together ultimately. And then, you know, we tried to run it as two different brands inside each other, but that didn't really work too well. So we kind of just mashed them all together. And, you know, the same people that worked on, we called it Ghost ATM, which was part of Ghost Lab. Those same fingers and those same hands and those same brains are what's building our Bitcoin portal and what continue to build our Bitcoin ATM software. It's just not really under the Ghost Lab as an entity still exists, but as a vision and as a concept, I'd say it's dead. Really, it all operates now under the Bitcoin Well brand, which also has its benefits. Like, you know, it removed lots of the distraction of building a software that was capable of B2B, capable of being kind of like a SaaS, you know, wholesale product. And now we just focus on internal needs, which allows us to build, in my opinion, faster and better for our retail customers, which is fantastic. But it just changed things up a little bit. But it was a good process, man. Like, it's really awesome to, especially in the early days of Bitcoin, you have these needs as a business operator, and then going through what's the solution, where's the solution? I'll just build the solution, and that was that still exists today, which is pretty fun and pretty awesome.
Yeah, I imagine we take for granted 15 years into Bitcoin's existence, probably a lot of the solutions that you can build upon. And you were probably starting so much as this at a time when it simply didn't exist. It wasn't like a matter of, oh, I need word processing, and so I'll use Microsoft Word or Google Docs or whatever. I mean, that's, you know, all that's been around a long time. They're like native necessities to Bitcoin that, you know, you kind of had to create on the fly.
Wallet was just a Bitcoin node that ran Bitcoin CLI, or what was at the time Bitcoin D, which is now migrated into Bitcoin CLI. Like, there was no, you know, no APIs into a custodian where you could just have a hot wallet. It was all hardcore, just raw Bitcoin built into whatever software you had access to, which was very few and far between. I remember too, setting up some merchants to accept Bitcoin, and it was laughable, man. There was no like easy point of sale, like, we're gonna put a tip function here. It was janky software that worked 80% of the time and was way slower. And it is really awesome seeing how the space adopts and also how the entrepreneurs operate in that space. You know, like you mentioned that you've been in the space for a couple of years now. What you do in the space and what I do in this space are like very, very different. But we both rely on each other's business, which is so great. The point of sale, you know, look at Zaprite, for example, making it easy to invoice with Bitcoin software. Like, not even close to what we do, but I would love to integrate with them. And I'm sure that, you know, you as someone that advises people on how, on their Bitcoin strategy, you know, you can use a Zaprite type of software. Like, there's just so much, this ecosystem, it's growing, but it's growing in this like positive, decentralized way where it's growing out of value creation, out of incentive alignment, and it's growing out rather than folding in, which is such a, man, that's such, that makes me so bullish on the future of this industry.
Yeah. I feel like if you've seen that, like the S curve of store of value and then the S curve, and then shortly thereafter, the S curve of medium of exchange, mm-hmm. I'm hopeful that we're getting close to that, you know, top, you know, closer to the top of store of value where that medium of exchange starts kicking in and it's sort of a natural progression. I'd hate to see some of these medium of exchange businesses go under because they were just ahead of their time. You know, that's,
yeah,
I know there will probably be some, right? I mean, but yeah. It seems like there are a handful that, and I think it's Zaprite who you can accept Bitcoin and fiat side by side. And so they've naturally integrated into the existing financial system to aid that transition. I think a business like that seems like it's got staying power because you can, like, why not accept Bitcoin if you, you know, if you like Bitcoin, if you're a Bitcoiner, totally. No, seems like a good transition.
It's fantastic. And this, like, being that center of that Venn diagram, as we transition from a fiat to a Bitcoin standard, there's staying power in that. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, ultimately what that comes down to is just having that vision for the Bitcoin standard, but then being able to work backwards away from that kind of altruistic view towards a more real, and this is something that I struggle with all the time. Like, you know, my vision for the world right now is like, everyone's got Bitcoin in cold storage. You can use those coins, you know, you can move them to hot as like a regular spending habit. You can spend those coins natively in stores. Like, you don't need to touch fiat. No one's got any debt. Like, it's very, you know, ideological and really like not a true representation of the real world. And so my team does a good job of like bringing me down to earth and being like, hey, you know, half our customers use self-custody, but don't really know how to use self-custody. Like, you got to chill on this, like, you know, on these specific problems. These aren't real problems for the most people right now. We got to focus on these real problems. I think that's like it's good to have that balance of, like, our vision for the future is, like I said, a Bitcoin standard where everyone can use Bitcoin and self-custody very, very, very easily. But at the same time, we got to figure out how to interact with the fiat world today because that's where the majority of the needs are.
Yeah, I totally agree. So we're going to come back to Bitcoin. Well, let's talk a little bit about content creation. So you've got your own channel, but then I know you got connected with Julian and Isabella. And how did you get connected with them? Could you explain GetBased and what all you do?
Yeah, so GetBased is it's a YouTube channel. It's more of a turning into more of a media company. And our mission is to bring people that final 10%. So the people that are, you know, probably don't trust the monetary system, probably don't trust the government, probably understand something's broken, but don't quite understand Bitcoin. We want to bring Bitcoin to them in a digestible and entertaining way. And so it's such a cool story, man. Julian and I met online. I think I saw one of his videos and reached out to him. And I was just like, hey, man, love the videos. Like, you know, we should do some work together. Let's just get on a call and figure things out. He's like, hey, I'm traveling to Guatemala to go tour this circular economy. Do you want to come? Do you want to come with me? So I was like, sure. So we met in Guatemala. We toured to Panajachel, which has about 60, I think, ish merchants accepting Bitcoin. We did this awesome, like, you know, just kind of documentary of us touring around the town. We took a boat. They have this really awesome, they have a diesel generator powered by used cooking oil that mines Bitcoin, which is just like awesome. They call it Kaboom. There's this one awesome part in the movie.
That's amazing.
Where I was like, why is it called Kaboom? And the like local guy looks at me, he's like, you'll see. And he fires it up and it's like, boom. And like the black smoke chugging out of the generator. It's like, it's really awesome. I highly recommend you checking it out. And then after that, I was like, wow, this is great. And then someone in Peru saw that video and was like, hey, you should come to Peru. We got a similar thing going on. There's like an altruistic angle. It's helping the people. I'd love for you to come check out what Peru's doing. And Julian doesn't speak the language. And so he tweeted like, hey, any Peruvians, you know about this little spot and want to come with me. And Issa is from Peru. And she was like, yo, I'm from Peru. Like, or my family's from Peru. I'll go with you. And so her and Julian go. And Julian texts me and is like, hey, we found the third piece. Like, cause him and I knew it wasn't gonna, we needed something more. And so Julian, Issa, and I kind of linked up and decided to, yeah, really find a way to bring Bitcoin, you know, to the people that already kind of get Bitcoin, but don't quite get Bitcoin, and do it in a way that is done through, you know, adventurous storytelling and kind of a more modern feel. And so that's been the mission, and it's been a lot of fun. You know, what I bring to the table is obviously like, you know, the Future Proof show, and that's kind of been my niche and focus in that. Julian's got his shorts and documentaries, and then Issa's got BTC Isla, and some of the other stuff that she's doing. And it's been great, kind of the three of us working together, feeding off of each other. It's been really cool. And then we've also been, I think, like, because obviously there's no money in that, so we've also been taking these storytelling and the things that we've been learning storytelling that way, and we've been working with other companies that need help storytelling, and we've been kind of like helping them with their scripts, helping them with their content creation, producing their videos, and then helping them with their social media management. That's kind of what's been funding that mission. So it's been great to be able to do kind of both sides of the coin, both, you know, in front of the camera, but then also behind the camera for other brands, you know, big brands that you like, you know, I'm not going to name drop anyone, but like, we've been working with a lot of awesome brands. And we've got a pretty high standard for who we're going to work with. Like, we're not working with anyone that's, you know, selling scams or doing nefarious things. We want to work with people who's on a mission to get based, who are on a mission to help the world really ground themselves. And that's been a lot of fun.
Very cool. And your videos are awesome. For the longest time, I would see you pop up on Twitter and I'd like watch your videos, and I didn't even put together who you were or anything like that. Didn't know what else you were up to. I was like, I guess this is some Bitcoin content creator. Never mind the fact that you have four kids and a successful business and all these other things going on in your life. So what is it that motivates you? You said there's not a lot of money in content, obviously. What is it that keeps you going? Cause you're pouring a good bit of time in on this stuff. And I know you've got your slick set up and it doesn't take you that long to kickstart things, but there's production that goes on behind it. There's thought that goes into what content am I creating? What is it that, that sort of pushes you to continue that?
It's the mission, man. I really, really believe in what we do. We being Bitcoin Well, and even me personally, like my mission personally, but also our mission as a company is to enable independence. And I cannot tell you how good it feels. And I've had now hundreds of these messages, people DMing me, they see me at a conference, they come say hi, they say, your take on XYZ helped frame my position to become more free, to take my coins into self-custody, to buy Bitcoin on a recurring basis, to get my money out of, you know, this tyrannical system, to stop doing this, which prevented me from doing that, to have more children. Like, it's so rewarding being able to speak this mind and these thoughts that I have, you know, that are rooted in a certain ideology and logic, and have people resonate with that. Like, it's amazing. And then of course, like, there is a benefit, like because people trust me and like what I have to say, they're going to use Bitcoin Well to buy their Bitcoin. They're going to trust Bitcoin Well. I had an interaction this week where someone said, you know, hey, I'd heard about your platform, but didn't know much about you as an individual. Started watching your content, and now I trust that you're not going to do anything that I don't like. Because like, the users have to trust us, right? Like, we've, at the end of the day, we have to KYC a certain set of users. We've got, you know, we are in the middle of the transaction, the conversion between dollars and Bitcoin. We then send it. Of course, it's sent non-custodially, but there's, you know, there's still Bitcoin Well, the platform that exists that users have to send money to and then get Bitcoin from. And our ATMs, you have to put cash in before the coins get sent to your wallet. Like, there is still, you know, a certain level. We're still a centralized business and people have to trust us. And I've given our customers an ability to see my thoughts, see who I am, kind of like who's the man behind the business. And they get a bit of a look into the mission and the guiding principles of the leader of the business, I suppose, and you know, of the team. And I think that it's that's a benefit. Like it's nice to be able to have an inside look, especially something as sensitive as, you know, our financial independence. Like, you know, we are the Bitcoin is the first line of defense between your value and everyone else, including the state. And it's important that, you know, the conduit to that, which is Bitcoin, well, it's important that you trust that group. And so it's been, that's kind of what keeps me going, I would say, is just, I really, really care deeply about our customers and about our customers' ability to be independent. And it's important to me that they feel as comfortable as possible using our platform.
Hey there, just a quick break and we'll be right back to the show. I wanted to spend a minute sharing with you how the Bitcoin Way helps individuals achieve self-custody and self-sovereignty over their money, their online life, and having a plan B as an individual. The Bitcoin Way can help you properly custody your Bitcoin using only air-gapped, open-source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallets. We help you set up and run your node. It doesn't matter if you're brand new to Bitcoin, if you've been in Bitcoin 10 years, there's a good chance that there's a gap in your self-custody setup, and we can help resolve that and give you confidence and peace of mind. When it comes to your online life, you are being tracked and watched and spied on by governments, by corporate interests all over the place. We can give you confidence that even logging onto Wi-Fi at your airport or at your local coffee shop, you are protecting yourself and remaining self-sovereign and private. Finally, if you want help adding to your passport repertoire, we've got a citizenship program whereby we establish temporary residency and walk you through the entire process, white glove service, boots on the ground through citizenship. It is important in a time of crazy economic and political upheaval that you have optionality when it comes to where you're going to live, reside, and spend your life. Check out thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free consult with the team to learn more about our services and understand how we can help you achieve full self-sovereignty.
Yeah, there are a lot of content creators. I think it's NVK jokes about over a long enough time horizon, every Bitcoiner becomes a podcaster. And here I am. Is there
a short time frame too, man? You've only been doing this for 2 years. It took me like 10 years to get into it.
I know. I've been fortunate. Is there like a way that you think about, like, so again, a lot of content, is there like a gap or a particular space in the content creation realm that you're like, that's kind of what I'm trying to fill, is, you know, new Bitcoiners or no coiners or old Bitcoiners, like, you know, OGs, what, how do you think about, like, when you're putting out a message, like who you're writing for and who you're, you know, producing this content for?
Yeah. I think it's kind of designed to bring people over that last mile. Like, we talk about relevant, you know, cultural stuff. Like, we covered the RFK speech. We covered the Trump speech. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of like covering politics, but Julian likes to do it. So we kind of, him and I have like a really healthy back and forth where I'm like, dude, more politics. He's like, yeah, do it. It's good.
It's good clickbait. It's good clickbait.
He's like, that thumbnail. I'm like, oh. So we kind of have a pretty healthy back and forth there. But then we also cover things like, you know, we talked about gold and how, you know, what's the difference between gold and Bitcoin? We're going to talk about, obviously, like Pavel Durov getting arrested this weekend is the video I'm filming right after this, and talking about how important free speech is, and just also why like the tie in there, which in my mind is so obvious, but might not be to most people, like why a non-custodial exchange or platform is so important, is because there's a throat to choke on all platforms. And it's like, you know, I am a throat to choke for Bitcoin well. You know, the CEO of Coinbase is a throat to choke for Coinbase. When the government comes, you know, for this industry, the throats to choke will be choked. And at the end of the day, if your coins are sitting there, then that's a problem. And which is why we're so like hellbent on being non-custodial, and why there's zero customer coins on bitcoinwell.com. And I think that just again reiterating that message, because people, you know, I bought the ETF, I own Bitcoin, oh, I've got Bitcoin in my Coinbase wallet, like I've got Bitcoin. It's like, you don't. Like, that's somebody else's computer, that's somebody else's wallet, that's somebody else's Bitcoin. And your subject, like, you can't really see it too well, but this is the 6102. Like that's that's real, man. And at the end of the day, like, it's going to happen again. And when it happens, I really care deeply that people have their Bitcoin in self-custody so they can leave. And that's what we're building a platform for. So I think that, like, I'm building, making content for the people that don't quite understand that yet, but they're like, they're almost there. And so my content is designed to be, you know, educating enough, but also, you know, I'm not too technical. Like, we don't get into UTXO management. We don't get into, you know, the soft wars and stuff. Like, we're not quite that technical. We're not quite that OG. We're definitely designed to be like, hey, you're a gold bug, but like, you should really look at Bitcoin and here's why. Like, hey, you're a freedom fighter. You're a freedom maxi. That's awesome. Here's why you need Bitcoin. Like, why do you have an RRSP? Why are you reliant on your 401k if you don't believe the state's going to be around in 50 years? Like, this logic's not lining up. And that's what the content's designed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. You talked a bit more about the Bitcoin well, and one of the key features is a self-custody by default, feature that you not offer, but enforce. And, I think it makes a lot of sense. Can you talk through two things? So first of all, just where did that idea come from? And then two, mechanically, how does that work? So if I purchase Bitcoin through Bitcoin Well, do I need to have an address plugged in where it automatically is siphoned off there? Or could you just kind of walk through that?
Yeah. So the idea, I mean, really what we did was, I kind of fell into this, but Bitcoin ATMs are effectively non-custodial just by nature, because you scan your address and put money in, and then the coins get sent automatically to that Bitcoin address that you scanned. And when we started building the Bitcoin portal, actually the first instance of the Bitcoin portal was with a Visa debit function, where you would say exactly the same function as the Bitcoin ATM, but just with your Visa debit card. So you'd like go online, $100, here's my Bitcoin address, here's my Visa debit card, and then, you know, the coins get sent there. And we saw some big problems with Visa debit, just blocking transactions and stuff, which is where we transitioned into the Interac e-transfer here in Canada, and more kind of like more popular and maybe a little bit easier to manipulate payment rails. And so what that gave us the ability to do was make the decision on which route are we going to go? Are we going to stick down this, you know, Bitcoin ATM style, this like digital Bitcoin ATM style, or do we go to like the, you know, fund an account, make your trade and make your withdrawal? And it was quite a, like, it was quite an internal debate on how we move forward with it. But ultimately what it came down to was it's actually easier to buy Bitcoin in a non-custodial environment once you know what you're doing, because you don't have to actually log into the platform, which is super cool. So the way that we operate is you send money here in Canada. We have kind of like an equivalent of Venmo, but it's all centralized with a banking system called Interac e-transfer. And you send an Interac e-transfer from your bank with the details on your Bitcoin portal. And the second that e-transfer comes in, Bitcoin gets sent to your Bitcoin address that you've kind of put into the Bitcoin portal. And there's some different things. You can have multiple addresses. You can label them, call them different things, blah, blah, blah. But before you would, like every other platform in the country, you have to fund an account. Then once it's funded, you can buy Bitcoin. And then once the Bitcoin's purchased, you can withdraw those coins off the exchange, which is kind of three steps. And that's kind of, you know, in my mind, that's three too many. Like, you should just be able to send money, get Bitcoin, which is the platform that we kind of opted toward. And that started really shaping how the Bitcoin portal is used, all underneath that lens of enabling independence. That's our mission. That's our single filter that we put every single decision through is, like, when we're faced with a fork in the road, the question is binary. The answer is binary. Which one enables more independence? And so that's kind of how we make decisions. When we did recurring buy, there's two ways to do it. That same, you know, give me your bank account, we'll pull the funds and then fund your account, and then we'll draw from that account. And like, that's kind of worse because you've got to have a balance. You've got to ultimately keep money with Bitcoin Well. And so we opted to flip that on its head. You can send a bill payment in the Canadian ecosystem. Send a bill payment to our designated payment address. When that bill payment gets credited to our processor, we then buy Bitcoin and send it straight to you. So it's just like little things like that we've kind of been continually leaning into. Mechanically speaking, it's way harder to do it that way for a couple reasons. One, and I think first and foremost, it's just opposite of how every other platform works. There's a heavy education barrier for most people that they don't quite people say like, where do the coins go? And it's like, you have to bring a Bitcoin address. Like you need to put your Bitcoin address in the Bitcoin portal. So we know where to send. It's like, oh, with these other companies, I can just buy Bitcoin. It's like, well, yeah, but you don't actually have control of that Bitcoin. You are less independent that way. Like we kind of, and so we're fighting ourselves in this, like we make our customer go through a little bit of work in setting up a Bitcoin wallet independently of Bitcoin Well, and then telling us where to send those Bitcoin. We also have to worry about on-chain like transaction fees. And there's been like, dude, I think during the peak around the halving, I think we were spending like $60,000 or $70,000 a month in transaction fees. Like it was just ridiculous. And like we were eating that because we weren't charging our customers for transaction fees. And so it's just like, whew, like, you know, that's a problem. And so we had to then, but then what did that cause us to do? It caused us to innovate around how to make that a little bit more scalable. It caused us to, we introduced the Lightning Network. We're in the process of investigating and introducing the Liquid Network, making those transaction fees lesser. And so there's definitely, there's pros the way that we do things. This is definitely the hard path though. And I believe as Bitcoiners, we are called to do the hard path because we know better, right? We know that being self-custody Bitcoin is the most valuable Bitcoin on the planet. We know that as a platform, as someone who is in charge of a platform, you know, we've got, you know, we're small. Like we've got, I think we've got 23,000 users or so. Like, you know, we know as someone with a small but growing audience, with a small but growing platform, it is our duty to educate the newcomers about how to take Bitcoin into self-custody, how to buy Bitcoin responsibly, how to store Bitcoin responsibly. And we don't take that lightly. We take that very, very seriously. And so as a result, we do our best to, we just do our best to like not take shortcuts and build things the right way in like a low time preference approach where we know, hey, this probably hurts us in June, July, August of 2024. But in 2026, you know, we're going to be miles ahead when this is the demanded standard by the majority of people. Kind of like, you know, not unlike like Elon's like autopilot. Like they're a decade ahead of everyone in autopilot technology. And we've learned so much in building non-custodial Bitcoin software that I think we're miles ahead. Like if Coinbase wanted to move to a non-custodial model, they would be worse than Bitcoin Well, which is like, that's good because the future of Bitcoin is non-custodial and or self-custody focused. And the fact that the big guys are behind us in that sense gives me a lot of optimism for our business.
Yeah, no, I love that. I was going to use the low time preference reference as well. And it's something we talk about a lot. The Bitcoin way is just being uncompromising in these principles. And for us, sometimes that just means long calls, lots of hand holding. I mean, our service is white glove. It's very manual. But when you think about the implications in the mission you talk about, I mean, this is long-term wealth. And for many people, the intent is this is generational wealth. And talk about low time preference. So you've got to slow down and like take steps accordingly with that vision in mind. I'm curious, how much do you think about today? We live in an age where it's like magic. You can take dirty fiat money and give it to someone and get Bitcoin, the most scarce, valuable asset ever to exist, in return. How do you think about in an age where, and like right now, I anticipate that to continue for some time. There will come a day where effectively exchanges, I'm not going to say they won't exist. I'm not going to try to predict the future, but you're either going to work for Bitcoin or you're going to have to steal Bitcoin. Like that's really how you're going to going to accumulate new Bitcoin. Do you think about like what your business looks like then, or is that far off enough like
all the time? In our pitch deck for 2 years now, since 2022, one of the prominent slides in our investor deck is if we do our jobs right, we will be obsolete in 10 years. which is like such an awesome thing to be able to say proudly, is like, hey, we are helping to bring on the Bitcoin standard. I think the next step for us is enabling Bitcoin usability. We started and we currently do a great job of Bitcoin accessibility. You can trade your fiat for money. But what happens when you have money, Bitcoin? What happens when, you know, now you're net sellers, now you're a net user, now you're a net consumer of Bitcoin because you work on a Bitcoin standard, like because you, you're a nomad and you just take Bitcoin, like all your money is just converted into Bitcoin automatically because you're on a Bitcoin standard. And so we've actually been introducing products that enable people to live on a Bitcoin standard and use Bitcoin from self-custody. Our goal there, so our mission is to enable independence. And how we do that, how we make that mission possible, is by making it easy to use Bitcoin in self-custody. And so we're definitely branching towards that direction. My vision, like I think our flagship product over the next 5 years is going to be a card tied to a hot wallet where you've got the seed to that hot wallet. Maybe it's a multi-sig, maybe it's some kind of collaborative custody in some way. I don't know the technical specs of it yet, but you should be able to have a card that you tap. And in real time, those Bitcoin are sold, sent to Bitcoin Well, and then Bitcoin Well funds that transaction on your behalf to the merchant. So the merchant takes fiat, but you're able to spend Bitcoin. And then ultimately along the way, you know, let's talk about 15, 20, 30 years down the road, your Bitcoin in self-custody should just be usable to those merchants themselves. So yeah, I think, you know, the last 10 years has been really focused on Bitcoin accessibility. I think the next 10 years are going to be really focused on Bitcoin usability and making it just as simple and user-friendly as possible to use Bitcoin and self-custody. Like right now, I can go to bitcoinwell.com and pay my Amex off with Bitcoin from my cold storage wallet, from my hot wallet, or with Lightning. You know, I can send Bitcoin anywhere in the world, or sorry, I can send fiat to someone's bank in Canada and soon in the US from anywhere in the world. I can send Bitcoin from my bank in Canada to anyone in the world. We're really focused on building a product that makes it, yeah, just easy to use Bitcoin.
Got it. So you threw out 10 years a few times. So I'm going to jump ahead for just a moment. If you take out your crystal ball, what sort of time horizon do you, I mean, is 10 years kind of where your head's at on a lot of this coming to mainstream adoption where what you're talking about is necessitated, or is that kind of just a, you know, an arbitrary number you throw out? And maybe more specifically, if you could think about like over the next 5 years, over the next 10 years, 20 years, like where do you see Bitcoin's, use, how has it been adopted? What sort of global adoption might we be looking at? I'd just be curious to hear any sort of, I won't call them predictions, but just hunches you might have.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such a good question, man. We're seeing in Canada, and I think we're seeing it, you know, I've been spending a lot of time in the US payment system, just as we expand down there, and we're seeing Operation Choke Point in full force. This is actually reminiscent of what it was in 2015, 16, 17, before, you know, people kind of banks and people started looking at Bitcoin as like a viable thing. Choke Point was real. Now we've gone through the viability stage and now we're in the then they fight you stage, and Choke Point is real. And so what that's ultimately going to do, Operation Choke Point causes more Bitcoin adoption than any other event on planet Earth. And so I do think over the next 5 years, there's going to be a lot of Bitcoin adoption. However, I think it will mostly be not welcomed by the authorities. And so I think there's going to be a lot of need for people to be creative with how they adopt Bitcoin. And there's going to be a lot of need for how companies help people adopt Bitcoin, which is the space that I'm happy to champion and happy to you know, be involved in. I think afterwards, there's going to be a pretty massive shift in how the authorities look at Bitcoin, because they won't be able to fight it, because they'll understand that like their country will die without it. And at that point is when mass Bitcoin adoption kind of comes in. So I'd say over the next 5 to 10 years is probably where that, you know, gray area Bitcoin kind of lives. And then 10 plus years is where we start to see like not quite Starbucks and Walmart, but probably like, you know, most mom and pop shops accept it. It's going to have the reverse of like credit cards. I think credit cards, it was only like the big people could afford it. So they did it. And then now like it's trickled down to like, everyone's got a Stripe, you know, a Square brick that everyone just taps and off the, even the farmer's market, like it, everyone has that ability to accept digital payments. I think it'll be them first that adopt Bitcoin because Bitcoin is built for them. And it's like, Bitcoin is anti-bureaucratic by nature. And so when you have a pile of bureaucracy in the Bitcoin decision, you just don't get Bitcoin. And a small business or a farmer's market or like a little merchant table at a market or whatever, they're anti-bureaucratic by nature because they're usually single owner operated. And it's just a very obvious choice to accept Bitcoin. We've actually built a product that allows people to accept Bitcoin and receive fiat instantly if their margins don't support them holding the Bitcoin. And it's such a great pitch. It's so awesome to go to these merchants and just say like, hey, just so you know, because I do this personally. I only want to spend Bitcoin. I live on the Bitcoin standard and I don't want to spend fiat. I want to also develop a little circular economy where in like I'm debanked and like I'm like considered a financial terrorist in this country. So I like need to use Bitcoin as much as possible. And having a beef supplier and a chicken supplier and an egg supplier that will give me food for Bitcoin is quite important. And I'll say, hey, you know, here's the system. Here's how it works. It's going to cost you 0.5% and you'll have money within 30 seconds of the transaction being approved. They're like, what do you mean? With Visa, you know, it's 3 to 5 days for the money to come in. It can be clawed back for 60 days. And it cost me 2.5% with a minimum of a $2 charge. And I'm like, yeah, you know, Bitcoin is just better for small businesses. Like Bitcoin works faster and is cheaper for your business to accept than the Visa card. And so I think that just that by nature is going to help the adoption grow during this kind of like gray market timeframe.
Yeah, I'm with you. So what was it? A couple months ago, the Samurai devs were arrested.
Yeah.
And to me, I was like, okay, this is the then they fight you. And then I go to the Bitcoin conference and RFK and Trump are speaking very positively about Bitcoin, or at least leaving us alone at the, you know, at a minimum. But my, like the more I think about it, I think the more paranoid and maybe realistic, I don't know, I get that there are a lot of powerful people who have a lot to lose on a Bitcoin standard.
That's right.
And so my concern with, you know, even if Trump wins or if RFK won, who seems, you know, sincere in his pro Bitcoin and it seems to have an actual understanding of Bitcoin and the technology, is the pressure to cave just like insurmountable, right? Because like there are just so many people that have too much to gain from the money printer, from central banking, from the way things have always been, that the next 5 years, maybe to your point, like the then they fight you stage really, really picks up steam. I was kind of optimistic for a short stretch over the last month. Like maybe we're going to kind of skip a lot of that. Like we've seen some of it, but like maybe, you know, the right people get elected, not that they're going to save us and that politicians are, you know, going to come to the rescue, but like maybe they leave us alone and we can just do this without a lot of interference. I'm less optimistic of that.
Yeah, I'd say I'm definitely less optimistic of that. I think there's also too a bit of a divide between the leader and the free market. Cause like you think about who's gonna lose in a Bitcoin standard, it's certainly like the, you know, the useless. It's certainly the middle of the train track. They're just irrelevant in a Bitcoin standard. But really it's the private businesses that benefit from that useless part of government. And that's the banks, that's the legacy, you know, traditional finance really. And they all have free will to do what they want, which it's such a mind bender to me, because I fully believe in the ability for private business to have the right to choose who they do and do not do business with. You know, morals and legalities aside, if you're a monster, I don't want to support your monstrosity. And so I'm not going to do business with you because I want to choke you out a little bit. Right. And so I believe in that right. The problem is the banks and TradFi sees us as the monsters. They see us as the villains and they want to choke us out. and they have that right. And so where I think, again, but what does that do? Let's play this scenario out further. If you as an individual understand that getting on a Bitcoin standard is important and your bank won't let you do that, you leave that bank, right? And this is why we have to start voting with our feet. We vote. Forget voting with your dollars. Vote with your actions, right? Demand that your employer pay you in Bitcoin. Demand that, you know, like for us, for example, we're over the next 3 to 6 months, we're going to be releasing a product that's going to enable you to send the entirety of your paycheck to Bitcoin. Well, convert any portion you want into Bitcoin and have the rest of the fiat sent elsewhere. We're going to become the middle. Right now we're seeing a lot of banks, like I'm talking 60% of banks in Canada currently are blocking certain subsets of customers from sending us money to receive Bitcoin. And so we have to circumvent that. We have to find new ways for them to be able to send us money, which is mind-blowing to me. It's very, very sad. And so what's the way around that? Well, let's get in between the customer and the bank. Let's remove the bank from the equation and go direct to source. And then from there, how does that look? Well, it looks like, you know, if you've got Bitcoin and I've got Bitcoin, don't use fiat. Don't use your credit card and pay that off with Bitcoin anymore. Use raw Bitcoin. Use Bitcoin directly. Use a self-custody solution that enables you. And this is why I think, you know, getting these environments set up, getting these ecosystems set up is so important, because it's ultimately going to come down to who accepts Bitcoin and who can you use your value with. Because choke point is real and choke point is coming. I've been living in a debanked way for almost a decade now. Like this is not new to me, but more and more and more people are getting it. We have this, like, it's the most frustrating thing. The largest bank in Canada is called RBC. And they recently just basically took off our payment processor. You can still send an e-transfer to us, but you can no longer send a bill payment to Bitcoin Well to get Bitcoin that way. And the same week that they took that ability away, they launched a blockchain and cryptocurrency division. And it's like the irony and the hypocrisy and the clear signs of a monopolistic centralized system is in that, in like the timing of that, the actions of that, the fact that we say, no, you cannot use Bitcoin. No, you cannot send money to this Bitcoin company, but here's our blockchain and crypto solution. It's like, you can't use sound money here, buy our scam is kind of like what that tells me. Yeah. And it's just so telling on what they are, who they are as companies, who they are as leaders, what their missions are. Their mission is not to enable independence. Their mission is to enable dependence. Their mission is to prolong this broken fiat system that robs from the poor, robs from the middleman, and only benefits the few at the top. And that's a horrible world that we as humans need to stop supporting. We do have an option. We have Bitcoin. We can opt out of that fiat system. And we have to start doing that so that not just so they get the message, but so that we can thrive and survive before it gets too late, before it gets harder to evacuate that system.
Yeah. I guess the one advantage we have going into Operation Choke Point, I don't know if we're 2.0 or if we're moving into 3.0 or where we're at, but, is in addition to a lot of ingenuity in the Bitcoin space and folks like yourself who are finding ways to make it happen, even in the midst of all of this, is we've got a heck of a marketing team in Macron, Trudeau, name your UK prime minister, the IMF. And I think that the problem has been, like, I talk about this a lot. And so anyone listening, I apologize in advance. You probably heard me say something very similar to this is in the United States, at least, I think more people are waking up in the UK because of people being thrown in prison for social media posts. I think the trucker protests in Canada probably woke up some people are like, what's going on in the US? If you go pick a random person off the street and they hear this conversation, if they heard what we do a couple of times a week, like it's people are just oblivious. Yeah. And it's like, well, that would never happen here. We have the First Amendment, or we have, you know, whatever. And it's like, unfortunately, the base case is a lot more pain has to come where people are like, oh, yeah, like my brother was just arrested, or he had his bank account frozen, or whatever. I'm 1 degree away from that now. Right now, like the UK feels a long ways away for most Americans. In Canada, you guys are just a bunch of nice people to the north doing your own thing. And until some of that pain is experienced on our soil, and I'm just speaking for myself and for Americans, you know, I think adoption remains slow. But I think that's coming. I mean, I think the UK, Canada, I mean, they're proving it. There've been crackdowns on free speech in the US too.
Yeah.
I
think the pendulum's swinging, and I think you're right that unfortunately pain is what drives change. But that's also part of what, you know, this medium and content is doing. Like, this is part of why this is so important. These conversations are so important. That's literally why we started Get Based, is to help get people based, to help get them across the line to realize, you know, what is to come. Because in a perfect world, I'd love to circumvent the pain. I'd love to just, you know, talk to people, wake them up and say like, hey, you got to get out before the house is on fire. And I think it's, I'm optimistic. I'm an eternal optimist. I always will be. But I think that's possible. And I'm bullish on, you know, your podcast and the hundreds or maybe even thousands at this point like it. You know, NVK jokes about it in kind of a cynical way, but it's important that Bitcoiners share that message. It's important that if you're listening and you're in, like, you know, the middle of nowhere USA, start a meetup. And if one person comes, that one person then brings two, and those two people then bring eight, and those eight people then bring 20. Like, over the course of the year, you got 20 people that are actually bought into the mission of independence, that are actually bought into how Bitcoin can and will change their life for the better. And then they can go and tell 20, and you know, and like, this compounds, but it doesn't happen overnight. You know, we've got this illusion that, like, it's 2024. How come everyone's not accepting Bitcoin? It's like, well, did you tell them to accept Bitcoin? Because if you didn't, then why do you expect someone else to? Like, you know, get off your butt and go do it. Start a podcast, start a meetup, be part of this community. That's so important. If you aren't going to do it, why on earth would somebody else? Well, I'm too busy. Well, I'm just not feeling that good. Oh, I don't know what I'd say. It's like, well, no one does. No one has those thoughts and feelings. But if you think it's important enough, then you got to just get after it. And, you know, what's the be the change you want to see in the world? Like bring the money that you want to see in the world. Help people understand what Bitcoin is. Don't be afraid of being labeled as some, like, psychopathic extremist. Like, if there's logic and facts rooted in what you're saying, just be stoic and consistent in your messaging, consistent in your mission. Start and do the hard thing.
Yeah, man, I'm reluctant to continue, but I have some more. That would be a great place to sort of wrap things up. I got to ask, though. So Bitcoin ATMs, it's so fun. Like, I think I remember seeing one at a mall. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember malls, but a long time ago, like, and I was just like, oh, I've heard of this Bitcoin thing. I was, you know, a lot younger then. It wasn't on my radar. And I've got, like, a gas station a mile from my house. There's a Bitcoin ATM. What's the trend of usage? Like, what's the use case people are? Is it just that's like an alternative to buying on an exchange? And like, what sort of trend are you seeing in terms of people using Bitcoin ATMs? Is that growing? Is it shrinking? Is it just kind of stagnant?
It's transitioning. Bitcoin ATMs in Canada for sure, but also in the US was like the first safe place you could buy Bitcoin. Like, think about all of the centralized custodial exchanges that have melted down in the world over the last 10 years. Like, there are very, very, very few people that have lost money due to that, you know, fraud at a Bitcoin ATM. Now, there's other problems with a Bitcoin ATM in that because they're non-custodial, the scam artists social engineer people to put money in them and then receive the Bitcoins. That's a whole other, you know, problem that exists in that environment. Right now, though, Bitcoin ATMs do an amazing job at circumventing Operation Choke Point 2 or 3 or 4.0. Because we have a network of 200 kiosks across the country that we control. And as long as we pay our rent to the gas station, as long as we pay our rent to the mall, they're happy to host our cash kiosk. And the user, the customer that wants to buy Bitcoin, can go and put cash in, and RBC or TradFi or their payment processor or their banker or their investment advisor or whatever can't tell them no, because it's just cash in directly to Bitcoin Well. And that's really powerful. We are able to allow people to buy Bitcoin with cash in Canada, and there's no other platform that can do that. Coinbase can't do that, right? You can't have, like, ShakePay can't do that here in Canada. We are the only online platform that allows you to buy Bitcoin. And by the way, you can also buy Lightning with cash because our Bitcoin platform has Lightning. So it is a great way. If your e-transfer gets denied because the bank's operation choke point, if your bill payment won't go through because the banks have removed that functionality from your bank account, if you can't send us a wire, you can, as a last resort, go to our Bitcoin ATM and deposit cash and buy Bitcoin. And I will never, ever, ever tell you no. I will never, ever, ever not let you deposit cash to buy Bitcoin. That's a right that we have to use the money that we have in our hand to be able to trade it for sound money. And the fact that we own and control that network, we own the hardware, we built and own the software, it's almost unconfiscatable. Now, there could be a law, you know, there is a throat to choke. They could go to the gas stations, they could go to the malls, and they can say, hey, no more of these ATMs. These ATMs are bad, and they're financing terrorist trucker organizations, and, you know, get these out of here, or we're going to choke. That is possible. But then we'll figure it out, man. We'll install some other kind of robot. We'll send a drone to your house. You clip an envelope to the drone, and we'll fly it back to headquarters. We'll figure it out. Using cash as a way to avoid Operation Choke Point. And so our Bitcoin ATM business, we started as Bitcoin ATMs, and we've transitioned towards a Bitcoin portal. And now our Bitcoin portal volume dwarfs our Bitcoin ATM volume. But the Bitcoin ATM volume and the Bitcoin ATM network is a very, very important part of the ecosystem as a whole to allow, to enable independence, to allow people to buy Bitcoin, to allow people and enable people to get Bitcoin into self-custody. So again, back to the mission. How do Bitcoin ATMs interact with the mission to enable independence? They avoid centralized confiscation of money, and that's a benefit.
Awesome. Okay, last question for you. So this is one I ask everyone just for fun, but what is an unpopular opinion that you hold, and you get bonus points if it's something that's going to offend Bitcoiners? But no, it can be anything, though. It can be anything.
Okay. Yeah, good. Something that offends Bitcoiners. I think, like we talked about it, really, like I'm not bullish on politicians in Bitcoin. You know, I want to drag that thought a little bit, but I've got another one for you too. We saw our Canadian Prime Minister, like not the one that won, but the runner up, the conservative version. He went on a big Bitcoin rampage. I actually had dinner with him and chatted with him a lot about Bitcoin. He then, like, weeks and months later, went on this Bitcoin campaign talking about Bitcoin, inflation resistance, blah, blah, blah. And all that did, that was during the 2020, 2021 run-up, and he looked like an absolute hero. And then in 2022, the price of Bitcoin fell, the other side attacked him, and he completely backed off, transitioned into some blockchain maxi, and it just was like, this is worse. Like, I would have rather you not had the word Bitcoin in your mouth at all than to go from Bitcoin to blockchain. We regressed as a society when our leaders regressed from Bitcoin to blockchain. And so I'm not sure if it's a hot take necessarily. I'm sure we probably agree on this, but when politicians speak about Bitcoin when it's going up and they focus on price, they lose all the time. Politicians focusing on price is the worst possible thing that can happen because price always goes down. There's always a cycle. Like, the world is volatile. Bitcoin is volatile. When you measure something in a volatile asset in fiat, it's going to have ups. And if something has ups, it has to have downs. And so it's just, when the politicians focus on price, like, what's Trump going to say at next conference if he took credit for the 3,000% gains and his timing is off for this, like, this next cycle? Like, what's he going to say? Under my leadership, it went down 80%, but don't worry, I did a good job. It's like, you can't have both sides. You don't get to take credit for one and not the other. And so I really, really hate when politicians pander like that only when times are good. It's like, hey, are you on my team or not? Because I don't care about the price because my Bitcoin are for my great-great-granddaughter. I want my great-great-granddaughter to be sovereign with Bitcoin in cold storage. And I don't think any politician wants that or even cares about that. So that's that. And then second one, I think the ETFs are bad for Bitcoin. I think it brought a ton of attention. I don't think it brought the right attention. I think the ETFs had very little to do. There's lots of inflows and blah, 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 trading volume, all this stuff. I think at best, it made Bitcoin more liquid. At worst, it made Bitcoin more fiat. And I think that fiat Bitcoin is not real Bitcoin. Fiat Bitcoin is not Bitcoin for my great-great-granddaughter. Nobody who's buying an ETF, it's like, oh, the corporations now have an avenue and a vehicle to buy Bitcoin. It's like, why do they care? Like, they just want price exposure. They don't want sovereignty. They don't want freedom. They're not prepared to fight against Operation Choke Point. When 6102 happens, they're the first ones to give their coins to the government. And then what? Now it's all centralized and the government can just dump the price and ruin your purchasing power. When you play out paper Bitcoin to the extreme, to the farthest end of where it goes, it's worse. And I just don't like that. I'd honestly rather we have $2,000 Bitcoin right now and more freedom maxis than whatever it is. It's like $60,000 Bitcoin right now. And, you know, a bunch of fiat maxis that just want, you know, sick gains.
I think that's a good take, man. Hey, I can't thank you enough for coming on, Ed. I'm glad we finally got to connect. Why don't you give a handoff? Where can people find you? Tell them all the channels, businesses, everything.
Yeah, man. I mean, first and foremost, like go to bitcoinwell.com. Learn about why self-custody Bitcoin is so important. Learn about why automatic self-custody is so important. And then use the number one platform in North America. Buy Bitcoin, send it straight to self-custody. I'd love your feedback. I want to know what makes that platform better for you. If you're a fellow independence maxi like I am, let's connect. You can get me on Twitter at @AdamO'Brien_. You know, if you're on YouTube, go to Get Based. You'll be able to watch me and Julian and Issa talk about Bitcoin and try to orange pill. You know, get them over that last mile into the orange pill. So I would say go to bitcoinwell.com, follow me on Twitter, and then go to Get Based on YouTube.
Awesome. Adam, thanks so much. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much and hope to do it again soon.
All right. Cheers. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Love Adam. He's an awesome guy. A lot of great thoughts on Bitcoin. He's been around a long time, so you can expect that. Make sure to follow him on X. Check out Bitcoin Well, Get Based, all the content they're putting out. Some amazing stuff happening. And of course, check out the Bitcoin Way. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a time with our team to learn more about our services related to self-custody, securing your online life, your mobile life, and getting Plan B options with our residency to citizenship program, rather. And you can follow us on X @TheBitcoinWay_ if you want to follow me there as well. It's @TheOtherMJordan. Would love to hear from you with feedback, comments, thoughts, suggestions for the podcast, guests, and so forth. Really appreciate you tuning in. Until next time, this is Michael signing off.